Hello, Houston. Live from the KPFT studios, it's the Houston Hour with Houston historian and TV's Mr. McKinney and Heidi Vaughn of Heidi Vaughn Fine Art. Now, sit back and relax as we bring you an hour of all things arts, entertainment, history, and Houston happenings. Here's Mr. McKinney.
Hello, Houston. It is Friday, May 17th. Mr. McKinney here with Mr. McKinney's Historic Houston, coming to you on the KPFT airwaves with my awesome co-host, Heidi Vaughn with Heidi Vaughn Fine Arts. Say hello, Heidi.
Hi, Houston. Hello, Mr. McKinney.
And we're back from break. Well, Heidi, you know, Sandy Wyman, our interim general manager, said we got to make sure that we cross-promote and let people know how great all these shows are on KPFT. And he's right. We've had the pleasure of having other programmers on our amazing radio station on the Houston Hour, and we have an opportunity right now to do the exact same. He is shepherding an important legacy here at KPFT, folks. This show has been on the air for over 40-plus years, and it's one of those shows and one of those examples of programming that's so diverse that covers everybody's interests. I am talking about Brian Levinka. He is the host of Queer Voices and the executive producer. Brian, welcome to Houston Hour.
Thanks for having me.
So this is a show on our radio station, Wednesdays at 8 o'clock. You can hear it all the time. It is a very popular show. I consider it one of those legacy shows like the prison show that we have here. It's one of those shows you don't mess with because you want to make sure that it's on the air always. When did you start getting involved with Queer Voices?
I was asked in 2008 after I did an interview for a Jungle Party fundraiser that we used to do back in the day for the Bayou City Boys Club. And because of the interview, they asked me to come on the show, be like a fixture on the show.
And now tell listeners who the host was at the time.
It was Jack Valinsky and Jennifer Poole.
Oh, wow. Well, those are two big names in the community. I mean, Jennifer Poole, and then, of course, Jack is, when it comes to KPFT radio, when it comes to things like the Pride Parade, these are early individuals that have kind of shaped the way and the ground for everything else, too.
Absolutely.
So what was your first job with the show itself? Did you just do a segment, or were you promoting something?
I was promoting things, and then I started bringing in segments, and then I started kind of learning the craft of being a radio host and the interviewing style and how to do the art that we do on the radio.
And you know, something else too, I think a lot of folks of a certain time period, again, this is the 90s, this particular radio show, it's something that you could listen to privately in your home. Maybe your parents are someplace else, maybe your siblings are someplace else, but you could really kind of connect over the airwaves with folks that you felt similar to. And that's what I think this show is so special, is it allows people to know the Houston LGBTQ plus community and not necessarily be in Montrose. For example, you grew up where?
I grew up in Brazoria, which is 50 miles south of Houston in Brazoria County. There's an actual town called Brazoria. And funny story, I listened to KPFT in my bedroom at night. I would listen to After Hours to kind of connect to the gay community because I knew they were there. There was this rainbow hill, rainbow like light shining from the hill that I knew was out there of Montrose. So I was excited to kind of hear about that.
Was that something that you didn't come upon in Brazoria?
Oh, no. No. It's backwards, redneck, backwater.
Okay, so you finally found, like, there were people who got you and you fit in with. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah. So what were some of the, I heard you say you brought some story ideas when you first started working with Queer Voices. What kind of story ideas did you have?
Well, I've been an activist for a long time, and I started off in fighting HIV/AIDS, and we were doing this party called the Jungle Party for the Bayou City Boys Club, and that's where I kind of started, and then I kind of saw a beneficiary that we had called the Center for AIDS, and then I was asked to go on their board, and then they merged with Legacy Community Health, and I've been on their board ever since.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good of you to give back to the community like that. What were some of the stories that you remember bringing in that were HIV-related?
Well, back in the day, this was, you know, as the drugs were becoming more prevalent, so it was kind of educating the community on that and kind of getting the story out, getting the message.
Was Queer Voices like the only place where you could hear that kind of information?
I don't know if it was the only place, but it was a big place in Houston.
So definitely that's something that's affected the community tremendously.
Oh, absolutely.
And I guess it's a safe, non-judging environment in which to talk about these things.
We try to promote that, yes.
Yeah, very important. What else besides HIV and AIDS? Did you ever do a show about what it's like to be gay in a small town?
Oh, plenty of shows about that, for sure. Yeah. My kind of activism has kind of morphed over the years. I started in HIV/AIDS, and then I went off. I got political with Denise Parker. I worked on her campaign.
Oh, nice.
When she became mayor.
Yeah.
And so that led to the LGBTQ Victory Fund, which I'm still on the board of. It's just kind of morphed, and now I'm on the Texas Pride Impact Fund's board, which raises money for nonprofits across the state. So it's just kind of meanders and kind of flows.
And you've done other work, like professionally?
I'm an engineer.
Where do you do that?
I work for Siemens Energy, and so we make gas turbines to produce green energy.
Well, that's just all good all the way around.
Yes.
Good for you.
And when you would go on this show, too, you came into contact with somebody who you and I both adore. Absolutely, I think, the keeper and the biggest cheerleader for Houston's LGBTQ+, and Texas LGBTQ+, history, queer music history, all these kinds of things. Tell listeners who you would meet via the radio show.
That would be the one and only J.D. Doyle. Yeah, he's a very good friend of mine, and I've been kind of helping him with this book. I don't know if y'all talked about that on the
interview. It's a great book.
We sure did.
Yeah. And we're so happy that finally happened, too. I know it's something he's been wanting to do, and he's enjoying the great success of the book tour. The book is selling really well. In fact, we should mention that, too. 1981 by J.D. Doyle. You can get it all over Amazon. You can get it anywhere books are sold, but it's become really popular. And what's so great about that book, by the way, is there's multiple chapters on his gay American road trip that he took back in 1981 all throughout the U.S., but he makes two stops in Houston. He ends up coming back to Houston. He tells you why and how, so definitely read the book. But for historians like myself, we learn a snapshot of Houston's gay scene in the early 80s. And I know you hail from a different time period in the mid-90s, but tell listeners a little bit about your first experience coming to Montrose.
Well, as I said, I've always known about Montrose, and it wasn't until high school that I kind of was brave enough to come here and kind of step foot in the land of milk and honey, I guess.
Did you know about Montrose from the radio?
I knew about Montrose growing up near Houston, but the radio kind of, we got deeper into Montrose lore in history through the radio.
That's very helpful. So here you are, a young high school, young teenager, you're coming to this area, even early college years. Here you are, paint a picture of what Montrose is like when you were here. What bars and restaurants were here that maybe are no longer around?
Well, there was Pacific Street, and I go back to the days of heaven before South Beach, and you know, the fire that brought South Beach to us. I remember Meteor. That's where I met my husband. We've been together now for almost 20 years, 19 Aww. Years. Pacific Street kind of merged into different things. It's now Blur. It's been all kinds of different things.
JR's has been there since the beginning.
JR's has been there since the beginning.
Yeah,
sure.
It's still there next to heaven.
Yeah.
You might not remember you might remember, but maybe not partake in the Montrose Mining Company. Most people talk about that.
Pacific. It had the best dancers.
There you go. You see, you heard it here. And then Postino's now. Most people will dine there at Postino's, have a glass of wine, have no idea.
I love going there and showing people JD's wall.
That's really important, and that's why it all kind of circles back to the J.D. Doyle Archives. And folks, jddoylearchives.org, and you can get information there and look at these great images, these photos of what used to be there, spending hours meticulously scanning things in and making sure that they're documented. And you will go inside the Montrose Mining Company, now known as Postino's, and you'll see this wall that has old photos, old advertisements, and you will just learn about the history by that. Another place that people can go to learn history in regards to bars, it's not too far from there. You walk over, it's on the second floor, really cool space that people can learn about the history of the LGBTQ plus Houston community when they go upstairs to
the Eagle,
the new Phoenix Room. Yeah.
Yes.
Talk about that space.
It's a great space. They captured a mural that was on the wall of Mary's that's very famous in gay Houston. It kind of shows a scene back in the day of the typical patrons of Mary's. You know, it was on the wall there for years and everybody enjoyed it. And so now it's an Eagle.
I think the artist is Scott Swafford. Swafford. There you go. Scott Swafford. Wow. Yeah. You will see a lot of his artwork throughout, but that was an iconic mural. And that was on Westheimer Road. People would drive by and see the mural on the side of the building. And I think he also did window art was also done.
He would do window art that kind of captured moments in the gay history, like different events and things that would kind of draw people into the bar. He also did the cover of JD's book.
That's true. Yeah, that's a very cheeky cover, especially the way if you look at the bookmarks that he did. That's, I think that's just brilliant if you look at the bookmark.
That's very, very fun.
Yeah. Was that your idea?
Oh, no. I enjoy it, though.
Yeah, it's good. It really is good. The book is 1981 by J.D. Doyle, so folks go out there and get that. Any stories about Mary's?
I went in, and I was always nervous to walk out because you walk out into the street like Westheimer, and everybody could see you. So it was kind of like, scary.
Oh.
And I was a young gay. I was kind of closeted then, so.
I would imagine that would be kind of scary. Worried that someone who knows you, who doesn't know this about you, would see
you're
you.
Just walking out onto the street. I mean, a very busy street.
Yeah. So. No back door.
No.
And you got the Tower Theater across the old, no longer the Tower Theater, of course, but Hollywood Video, I guess, would be something and morph into Tacos El Rey. So just all these things. But so here we are on the monster. What about bookstores? What were some old bookstores that you remember that are gone?
The Lobo bookstore that used to be next to the Hollywood Video / Acme Oyster. It was right there. And it was a place to be in the 90s and early 2000s because they would have different gay material that you couldn't get anywhere else. And I remember they had ornaments for Christmas that were like cheeky, kind of campy. So those were fun.
And again, folks, for listeners in context that are listening out there, this is all pre-internet. So you don't have a lot of things. One, you don't have the internet to research on your own. You don't have Amazon to order books and have them delivered to you discreetly. These things don't exist. You had to go to some of these places to be able to connect with folks in the community. And sometimes just, a coffee shop is not a bad thing. If you
I misspoke. It was not Lobo. It was Crossroads. Lobo was down the street, which also had like fun cards and videos and all kinds of stuff.
And like I said, you couldn't get this stuff anywhere else at the time period unless you went to these places within the Montrose area. Now, when it comes to the radio show, what would people expect to hear? Give me some ideas, some of the segments, because we have lots of great listeners on KPFT, and many of which are allies or are members of the LGBTQ+ community, but they don't even know about Queer Voices. They don't necessarily listen to the radio or they haven't heard about the show. What can they expect to hear on the radio show?
So we try to be entertaining and informational to our audience and the audience larger than our own. We do events, we do issues. We interviewed all the mayoral candidates on our show, kind of getting their viewpoint on the LGBT
community. Super important, yeah.
I try to do political, tying into the Victory Fund that I'm a part of, try to do political candidates. We do a lot of theater. We're big theater people, theater queens, I guess.
Well, you're right. People come from Theater Under the Stars, for example, the Broadway series. One of the stops is Queer Voices. They'll come on the show. They'll talk about what they're doing. It's a big economic driving force behind live performance, so there's some money there, and people want to reach out to those folks as well. What about music?
We do a lot of music. J.D. Doyle, of course, was instrumental with Queer Music Heritage over the years. We try to incorporate that into the show nowadays.
That's good. And you mentioned earlier politicians, too. That is important to get them on record. And when you have a radio show and you can get them on record saying they're going to help the community out in this way, it's very hard for them to go back and backtrack and not do it years later.
For sure. I interviewed John Whitmire before he became mayor of Houston, and he's promised to come back on the show now, so we're going to follow up and see.
How did that interview go?
Very well.
Anything in particular you want to mention that he said?
He's just very supportive of the community, and he's an ally for us, and we can count on him if we need it.
Good. I'm very glad to hear that.
We talked about doing an equal rights ordinance, and he was receptive to that, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, and you mentioned things like the Victory Fund. You mentioned, even the caucus, too. There's been times where certain candidates have received the endorsement of the caucus or even funds from the Victory Fund, sometimes where they are members of the LGBTQ+ community, but they don't get that endorsement. So it's not guaranteed. You really have to be somebody who's willing to put your neck out there and stand up for something and be a voice.
Right, and the wrinkle with the Victory Fund is that you have to be viable. You have to be not only gay, but someone who can win. And so there's a whole list of criteria to get to that point.
Give us an example. That's a very good point to make because, you're putting lots of money and capital energy into a candidate. They have to be the right candidate. And sometimes you want someone who's better. And y'all even have, I think y'all have like courses and classes people can take,
we
right?
We have a candidate campaign training that goes on 4 times a year.
Holy cow. I didn't know that. That's a big deal.
The Victory Fund has a 501c3 nonprofit portion of its organization, and the candidate campaign training falls under that. And so it's a big plus to be trained. It's not necessary to get endorsed, but it does help. You got to be able to raise money.
And tell listeners, too, who is running the Victory Fund.
That is our own Anise Parker.
This is a national organization, folks.
A national LGBT organization.
Yeah, all over the country. So they're candidates. So you will see former Mayor Anise Parker flying all over the country to do events, do things, not just Houston, Texas, but obviously we're very blessed to have her have a Houston, Texas connection because when it comes to supporting candidates in this area and being a mentor to so many people, she's right there down the street.
She's down the street and she's a success story for the Victory Fund. She went through the training back in the day. She was one of the first candidates to win in Houston. She progressed in different offices and then she became mayor. And then after that, she's teaching people how to do what she did.
Well, I would say a big part of why she's so wonderful is she's so accessible. The last time I saw her, I was at the Orange Show Gala, and we were both waiting in line to have our fortunes told. And we were in line for quite a while and had a big political conversation. And I think it's really important as a candidate to just be someone that anyone feels like they can walk up to and talk to.
Absolutely. She's one of the pillars of Houston LGBT community, in my mind.
For sure, yeah.
Who are some that are gone, some that you interacted with in your 20s and 30s, being involved in activism throughout the city, but maybe somebody who's gone that is worth mentioning for people that don't know about them?
Probably the biggest one is Ray Hill.
Yeah.
Ray Hill is kind of called the godfather of LGBT radio in Houston.
And activism.
And activism, for sure. He's the one who kind of mentored me and kind of got me into the groove of doing the radio and why it's important. And the history of his activism and his shows kind of rest on my shoulders, I feel. So I want to continue the tradition.
What an honor to be mentored by him. And I just think that's, he wants to see this be successful because he also was a former host of the show.
Absolutely.
You know, and producer for the show as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you mentioned Jack Walensky too. I know that he's kind of credited with being really an early and strong supporter of the Pride Parade, kind of shepherding it through a lot. And he served as Grand Marshal. You've actually served as Grand Marshal back in 2011.
I did.
You did?
I was Grand Marshal.
Wow.
Which is the gayest thing you can ever do.
It sounds it. Yeah, absolutely.
You're at the front of the parade. You're just waving. And
I think the gayest thing you ever do is what J.D. Dole did when he wore that shirt.
Yes. That is the next level.
When he was Grand Marshal.
Yeah, what did he do?
He wore Jimmy Carper, who was also on KPFT's.
It was a tribute.
Yes.
Yeah.
What Jimmy wore during when he was Grand Marshal, J.D. wore that.
I think it was something like 20 years or earlier, 30 years earlier, he wore that shirt. So it was a tribute to his friend.
Yes,
but it was a pink, I think it was pink. It was a flowy, like a piratey shirt, a blousey shirt.
It was a blousey pink shirt that Jimmy Carper loved the color pink. And he was part of After Hours on KPFT, which was a show that was kind of gone away.
I've never heard of that one.
It was the kind of the companion to Queer Voices on Saturday nights from midnight until like 4.
Oh, that's a long show.
It was.
And it was similar content or?
Theirs was a little bit more racy than ours. Ours was more kind of like, we called it the Nightline version.
Mm-hmm.
We were kind of the news and kind of the stories in the community where they were kind of the gossip, maybe.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Kind of.
Is the show just 1 hour in some cases, or 2 hours, or has it fluctuated in format to where it's been longer and shorter? Or?
Well, as you know, KPFT gives you things and they take them away. So we used to be 2 hours, and so now we're 1 hour, which makes us be a really tight show because we have to tell our story in a very short period of time where we can't just meander like we used to.
Mm-hmm. Which is part of the fun. So sometimes that meandering, sometimes that spontaneous, that conversation.
It really is, but you know, we only have an hour, so we got to get in and get it done.
Now, if somebody has a, you know, queer-owned business, or if they have a really neat story, how do they reach out to Queer Voices? How do they get on your show? It's a big deal.
You can email me at brian@queervoices.org.
B-R-Y-A-N.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. That's good to know. That's helpful.
And we're always looking for segment ideas and, you know, anything LGBT-related or LGBT-adjacent.
Now, you're on so many different boards. I want you to list the ones that you're very active with, and there's a reason for it.
Okay, probably my biggest one is Legacy Community Health. I'm on the Endowment and the Services Board for that. I'm on the Victory Fund, as I said. I'm on the Texas Pride Impact Funds Board. I'm on the Executive Professional Association of Houston's Board, EPA.
Oh, they had an event here maybe 2 years ago. It was a great crowd. We put on a special evening for them.
It's a fun group.
Yeah, it was a really good group. I think maybe 50 people came.
Art collectors, too.
Some of my best art collectors are from the gay community, without a doubt.
We do like art.
Yeah, you do.
I'm also on the board of the Alzheimer's Association as a way to kind of bridge to the LGBT community.
Oh, that's nice of you. I hadn't thought of that. That makes sense.
Let's see. I'm on 6 boards, so is that 6?
Wow. So are you still actively working?
Well, and you're scaling down because we had breakfast, you and I and JD. He said that, I mean, you were on all these different boards he was mentioning as well. And I bring this up because you've been active, involved since your 20s. And I think that a lot of people don't realize, maybe even earlier than that too, if you count earlier years, but you look for younger people to take on the mantle and to get involved. And I think it's so simple for some people to reap the benefits of the hard work that people in the community do. But we want to educate people that these are amazing organizations that you're a part of, that you've helped to grow over the years. And we always look for new leadership to come into any organization. And we want people to get inspired. And I'm sure if somebody came to you, you know, a young LGBTQ+ member of the community said, hey, you know, would you mentor me or how do I get involved with that organization? So I love that you mentioned some of those because those are the big ones in Houston that do make a difference.
You know, and I would love to do that. I turned 50, so I'm not as young as I used to be. I think of the 90s as my heyday. That was my jam. Mm-hmm.
The 80s were mine. So six boards is a lot of boards to be on. You're real active in the community.
Well, let me kind of explain where I come from. I was unemployed for several years because oil and gas is up and down.
Right.
And so I just got back into working in the last year. So I'm trying to kind of eliminate and kind of lighten my load, so to speak. JD is very adamant that I need to get off of these boards.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you used your time wisely by continuing to contribute when you weren't working. I mean, that's a beautiful use of your free time.
I hate to be, you know, I like to be busy. I hate to be idle and not doing anything. So
yeah. Me too.
I keep myself busy.
Well, and your greatest gift, I think, is the passion you have for Career Voices. So thank you for doing that. Let people know where they can get a hold of you. And once again, the radio station, where can they get a hold if they have any questions or want to get on the show?
Probably the easiest way is to email me directly at brian@queervoices.org. We have a podcast that's available in all the podcasts. Our show is also a podcast. It's available on all the channels where you can find the podcasts, Apple Music, iTunes, Spotify, and whatever you need. And we're on Wednesdays at 8 o'clock.
That's right here on KPFT. So make sure you tune in. Well, Brian, thank you again for joining us on the Houston Hour. Really appreciate it. We are now going to hand it over. Take care, Houston.